This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, the 108th Congress gathered for one final lame duck session to wrap up a few loose ends, major ones, intelligence reform and a $388 billion omnibus spending bill. That measure was actually approved last month, but objections arose when representatives realized that one provision gave members of the Appropriations Committees access to look at Americans' tax returns. We're going to focus for most of this hour on 11,000 other measures approved by Congress this year, pork barrel projects that representatives and senators will bring back home. But first, senior Washington editor Ron Elving joins us here in Studio 3A. Ron, thanks for coming in.
Good to see you, Neil.
And the spending bill first. How did this tax return provision find its way into this bill in the first place?
Well, let me tell you what the official word seems to be. Richard E. Efford, who is a 47-year-old, 20-year veteran of the House Appropriations Committee staff, he's listed as a clerk, but his job is more important than that may imply, says that he put it in to facilitate some access that members needed to have and staffs needed to have to oversee the functions of the IRS, and absolutely had no intention of doing this to get around or subvert or avoid any of the usual restraints on revealing information from IRS records, and that was all a misunderstanding. And no member of Congress has indicated any kind of involvement in this or responsibility in this, but Mr. Efford works for Ernest Istook, who is the chairman of the subcommittee that he works for on the House Appropriations Committee.
And, of course, this omnibus spending bill was so enormous and cobbled together so quickly in the last lame duck session that nobody actually read this provision and put up a red flag.
Deep in a pile of 1,600 very quickly photocopied pages, which were actually photocopied on both sides, so the bill itself was more like 3,200 pages worth of bill, deep in there, about right in the middle, was one paragraph that established this access for these people. And it was not until quite late in the process on a Saturday night that a senator or one of the members of his staff actually spotted this and said, wait a minute.
And so the idea is this Congress has to strip that provision out and then vote on the bill. And I presume once the provision is out, that's a pro forma vote.
Absolutely. It's essentially done. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is come back and say, we want this out, we want this one paragraph out, and then we want the bill deemed to have been passed, and that is what will happen.
And then goes up to the White House, where the president, of course, is expected to sign it, since this is the money that allows the money that keeps the government working.
$388 billion, which keeps all of the appropriations for domestic functions of the federal government. The Defense Department would go on spending money overseas, foreign operations, things of that kind. But the domestic operations of the federal government entirely depend on this bill being signed into law this week, or the federal government will start to shut down.
Now, intelligence reform, and this is more controversial. Earlier today, we heard expectations from the White House that a deal is very near, in the works. What's going on?
It would appear at this hour that the White House has persuaded the leadership in the House to add some language to the bill that will placate, if not entirely satisfy, the objections of two key committee chairmen. We've been saying these names now for some weeks. Duncan Hunter, the House Armed Services Committee chairman from California, and Jim Sensenbrenner, the House Judiciary Committee chairman from Wisconsin. They are very powerful men. They can move a lot of votes. They've both been there quite a while, since 80 and 78, respectively. A lot of their committee members will vote as these men will vote, and a lot of other conservative House Republicans will as well, because of the issues they've raised with the chain of command and in the military, and the immigration restraint and control on illegal aliens that Jim Sensenbrenner thinks is key to protecting us from 9/11-type plots.
And again, when it comes up for a vote, is expected to pass easily. In fact, everybody says it could have passed without these changes.
Yes, and in fact it could, because a preponderance of Democrats will vote for it without these changes. They would have been glad to vote on it right after it came out of the House and Senate negotiations on November 20th, which is already getting to be more than 2 weeks ago. But these objections were raised by these House Republicans, and the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, has said he does not want to bring the bill out for a vote on the floor until he's assured most of the Republicans in the House will vote for it. Not all the members of the House, that majority they're assured of, but a majority of the majority members, the Republicans. That's his view. And let's remember, these are the people he works for. The Speaker is elected by the Republicans, the majority party. And they have not even had their next election to choose their Speaker. There's no challenge to Dennis Hastert. We don't expect there to be any contest. But the truth of the matter is he has not yet been elected Speaker for the new Congress that starts in January. And obviously he wants the support of the majority of the majority, most of the people in his party. They're his boss.
But at this moment, there were questions earlier in this process about whether President Bush was actually committed to this reform process. He had objected, in fact, to the creation of the 9/11 Commission, had been somewhat lukewarm to its recommendations. But now he's put his credibility on the line. Would Speaker Hastert deny his president, his freshly reelected president, a bill because he doesn't have enough Republican support?
Well, that's what he has done up to now. And this is his last chance to turn around and say, no, I do want to serve my president, and I do want to do what the president is telling me to do, despite the opposition to it in my caucus. So I'm going to find some language. We're going to tweak the language of this bill. We're going to find something the Senate is willing to sit still for, and we're going to then say to Duncan Hunter and Jim Sensenbrenner, this is the best we can do for you. Please now get on board. And we'll see if that works. It's very much hanging in the balance.
And the 108th Congress then is scheduled to wrap up whether they pass this or not tomorrow.
I think they'll probably be around on Wednesday. The way it looks right now, although they're tentatively scheduled to vote 10 o'clock Tuesday morning on the intelligence reform, they will probably need another day to get this language, to get it agreed to by the Senate. I think if there's going to be a climactic vote on this that gets it all resolved, that would have to have another day, and it'll actually happen on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Before we let this Congress go, though, what is it the 108th going to be remembered for, do you think?
Another tax-cutting Congress. They cut taxes for businesses, which they had been putting off in the first couple of rounds of tax cuts in the first term of President Bush. They got around to it this year. They passed some extensive tax cuts for business. They also extended many of the tax cuts for individuals that had been passed earlier in 2001 and 2003, worth about $146 billion over 10 years. These are things like the child tax credit and things of that nature that were already in place but were scheduled to expire. They passed that. They also made the first swipe at trying to pass a marriage amendment. Marriage is between a man and a woman, and that'll be part of the Constitution. They didn't get even to half the Senate, but they'll be back again next year, and they made the first effort at that in this particular Congress, and a lot of people will look back on that. They got the partial birth abortion ban accomplished. Some other restrictions on abortion were accomplished. They also continue to support the war in Iraq, and that's awfully important to an awful lot of people, appropriated another $25 billion for that war. At the same time, they had a really rough time on the fiscal side, didn't get a budget resolution in this past year. They therefore had a terrible time doing these appropriations bills, which is why they're here in December in the first place.
NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
$25,000 to develop a curriculum to study mariachi music in Nevada. $1.5 million to transport naturally chilled water from Lake Ontario to Lake Onondaga. $250,000 for traffic calming in Windermere, Florida. Those are just three of the projects in the 2005 omnibus spending bill. They're known on Capitol Hill as earmarks and everywhere else as pork. Over the past year, Congress approved a record 11,000 earmarks, costing more than $24 billion. Critics say that the pork is often a waste of taxpayer money and steals funds from more deserving programs. Supporters say one man's pork is another man's progress. Porkiness can be measured by distance. Vital spending when it's in your town, a boondoggle when it's anywhere else. So call and tell us about that new bridge or post office or research grant where you live or work. And do you measure your representatives and senators by the amount of money they bring back home from Washington? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us now is Alan Hammonds, Executive Director of the B.B. King Museum Foundation in Indianola, Mississippi. The B.B. King Museum was awarded $1 million in the 2005 spending bill, and Alan joins us now by phone from his office in Mississippi. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. I'm glad to be aboard today.
B.B. King is a great musician, but why does this museum deserve $1 million in federal money?
Well, you know, I've been asked that question a number of times, and we who are involved in the museum tend to look at the program that we're working on as an economic development project. And it's really not just a museum about B.B. King. There's a greater common mission for this, and it really has to do with the fact that we live in an area that's often been likened to a third world country. B.B. King's life is essentially an example we hope to be able to use to create programs, outreach programs for at-risk youth, to give them a sense that through some combination of hard work and perseverance, and much like BB's continual efforts at self-improvement, perhaps can show them the way out.
Is it fair to describe this money as pork?
Well, you know, like a lot of other Americans, I've been probably very guilty of making those same kinds of assertions about all manner of projects. But having worked in the area of economic development in the Mississippi Delta for about 25 years, I really don't view this project any differently than I view a lot of other projects that I've worked on in the past. There will be job creation. There will be a certain amount of economic progress to be made as a result of the creation of this project. And the other thing I think that's noteworthy for your listeners is this really only amounts to 10% of the total project. This is a $10 million project. And when I look at what the people of this little community of Indianola have done, I actually live in Greenwood. I'm a much larger community a little off to the east. Indianola has 12,000 residents, and they have raised, dug deeply into their pockets, and produced more than $1 million locally for this project. I think that's pretty remarkable. It amounts to more than $80 for every man, woman, and child in the community. And I think it says a lot of good things about how committed these people are to the project. And you can say, well, does the rest of the nation need to play in this game? Well, our country has a long history of involvement in economic development projects, CDBG, rural development monies, and principally they're focused on job creation through industrial growth. But I don't view this really any differently. And I made an interesting observation to some people in my office a little earlier. Several years ago, I worked on an airport runway extension project, came to Washington, lobbied, secured a $2.2 million grant, and only 10% of that grant had to be matched locally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this particular instance, this is the inverse of that situation. Nobody yelled about the $2.2 million for the runway project, but we've seemed to have become the poster child for pork barrel spending over this 10% investment by the federal government in a project I think has great social implications for our area.
Who did you have to lobby to get this money? Whose earmark is it?
Well, we came to Washington. Clearly we did this. And the first person we contacted was Congressman Benny Thompson, who represents our district. And then earlier this year, we did come to Washington and met with Senator Lott's staffers, and we also met personally with Senator Cochran. And, you know, we elect these people to do a good job for us. And we think they're right-thinking and reasonable individuals, and I suspect that they looked at this and looked at the potential merit it had for the citizens of our region and thought it might be a sound and solid investment, and we totally agree.
Now, do you think your project, as worthy as it is, might be taking money that might have gone to some other projects? For example, spending for the National Endowment for the Arts is down this year.
Well, it is, and we are aware of that. However, we do feel that the project is worthy. We don't believe that that our job would be quite as easy if we didn't have this grant. $10 million is an ambitious effort for a very small community in the Mississippi Delta. But when we look at what we look at every day here, you know, I travel quite a bit, and I've traveled quite a bit in pursuit of this project.
Mm-hmm.
I come back home, I'm fresh with the visions of the economic successes of other regions of our country, and I come back to the Mississippi Delta. Unless you live here or visit here frequently, it's a little hard to relate to you just what conditions are like. Now, some people live very well, but there are a lot of people in our area who don't. There are a lot of children without a great deal of hope, and I think that through these outreach programs that will be developed in support of this project, I think there's a lot of common good that will result from this.
Alan Hammonds, thank you very much, and good luck with the project.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Alan Hammonds is executive director of the B.B. King Museum Foundation in Indianola, Mississippi, which received $1 million in the omnibus spending package this year. He joined us by phone from his office in Mississippi. The politics of pork and your calls when we continue. If you'd like to call us, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the politics of the pork barrel. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email totn@npr.org. What projects in your community come from federally funded dollars? And joining us now is Andy Taylor, senior writer for Congressional Quarterly, with us here in Studio 3A, and welcome.
Terrific to be here.
We've been talking a lot about it. What exactly is pork?
Well, basically, it's something that is sought by an individual member of Congress. It's generally an earmark for a particular purpose, a road project, this grant to the B.B. King Museum, any number of things, grants to local hospitals, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So these are add up after a while? 11,000 of them is $24 billion.
Yeah, it does add up to a lot of money. The people who seek them, or the members of Congress who provide them, say it's entirely justified that, mm-hmm. that one of their jobs as an elected official is to represent their district, and they know their district better than bureaucrats in Washington who might otherwise allocate this money.
But the money, for example, the B.B. King Museum, did that go through hearings? Was there a consideration of this? Did the whole Congress vote on it?
Well, there actually is a process to put these projects into the bill, and it's a little bit more regimented or regularized than you might imagine. Basically, you basically apply. You're a member of Congress. You write a letter to the chairman of the appropriate subcommittee and say, gosh, you've got this pot of money. I have a perfect idea for that, and here are here are, say, three or four things that I can do for my district in the order in which I'm seeking them. And then the judging is up to, generally speaking, the smaller group, the Appropriations Committee.
So you better be nice to the Appropriations Committee chairman.
Very much so.
Okay. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Bob joins us from Louisville in Kentucky.
Hi there.
Hey, Bob.
I was calling about our representative, Ann Northup. She's just reelected for her fifth term, a Republican. I'm a registered Democrat, and she's about the only Republican I voted for, as a matter of fact, this last election. The main reason is that she does a good job. The third district in Kentucky, here in Louisville, in Jefferson County. She's pushed hard for money that I think we need. The African-American community has gotten a lot of money from projects that they have needed to help on, and she's pushed for. And
give me a for instance.
Well, what we call the West End in Louisville, which is an African-American community here, she has pushed for some work through some churches and church organizations to help funding for all kinds of child agencies and what have you. She's pushed very hard on the Ohio River bridges that we need desperately here. We're trying to get two bridges built across the Ohio River, probably many, many hundreds of millions of dollars is what it's going to cost, and I'm not sure I'll see it finished in my lifetime, but it's part of the interstate highway system, and they desperately need to be done, and she has pushed very hard to get that done. And
okay, and you say
real hard.
One of the reasons you voted for her was because she brings this money back to her
well,
district.
Yeah, all that, and she's been here a while, and of course, I think representatives, maybe even more than the people in the Senate, the longer they serve, the better off they are for your community, the higher, better jobs they get, the more seniority they have, the more pull they have with the committee chairman and what have you, and maybe mm-hmm. someday they'll be a committee chairman.
Okay, Bob.
So that's why I think it was a good thing.
Thanks for the call, Bob.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It.
Okay.
As Bob voted for that congresswoman, presumably one of the reasons people do it is because it makes them popular back home.
Right. Well, Congresswoman Northup is sort of epitomizes the dynamic that is often at play here. First of all, she's on the Appropriations Committee. She's very aggressive in representing her district. And she is in a district that actually tends to swing for Democrats. And since she typically has a close election, the leadership and the chairman of the Appropriations Committee keep a special eye out for her when she's coming to ask for these earmarks.
Mm-hmm. Get another caller in. Michael's with us from Kalkaska, Michigan.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, you're on the air, Michael.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious about these. What are you actually calling pork, in other words? Like that project in Louisiana that you're talking about with the B.B. King Museum.
It's actually Mississippi, but go ahead.
Oh, okay, Mississippi. You know, that's probably a great thing for those people down in Mississippi, and I'm not against it, but, you know, it's like, how does that benefit me here in Michigan? And so, you know, I mean, where does it cut off? Like, the man you were talking to before mm-hmm. was talking about the bridges in Ohio. Now, I could see where that could have an effect where people are traveling through the nation and they want good bridges. So, I mean, what is pork? Mm-hmm. What are you calling pork? And
well, some of it is vital infrastructure, like bridges.
Right.
But as Andy Taylor, some of it is more questionable.
Right. And how do we distinguish that, and who's doing that?
Well, there is actually a group that dedicates its existence to, among other things, rallying against pork. They're the Citizens Against Government Waste.
And we'll have a representative on shortly.
And they say pork is something that, say, it's not requested by the president, or it's not sort of competitively awarded. I mean, one of the things about these projects is that you know, a bunch of them might have gotten funded anyway, particularly road and bridge projects, that they would be prioritized by the Secretary of Transportation. But it sure looks a lot better to an elected member of Congress if they're the ones responsible for doing it. So there's a little bit of that dynamic as well.
Mm-hmm. Michael, good question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's talk now with Thomas, and Thomas calling from St. George in Utah.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling about a project that's across the street from my house. In St. George, Utah, we have quite a bit of dinosaur tracks and other similar things, and we got about $500,000 worth of funding to build a museum over some of the dinosaur tracks.
This is to put a roof over them?
Yeah, but it's a very expensive roof. I'm a structural engineer, and as I watch the structure going up, its architecture is very, very expensive. It could have been done, I think, a lot more efficiently, but Senator Matheson was trying to get the vote of our city, and it was very important to him to spend lots of money here.
You suspect that this is a little bit overblown?
I think it's a bit excessive.
Uh-huh. So what kind of dinosaur tracks are they, by the way?
I don't know the name of the specific dinosaur, but it was one that was a plant eater. It had three toes. It's quite a common print that you see in textbooks and such.
Okay. Obviously, Andy Taylor, if this museum is going up over these dinosaur tracks, without the kinds of hearings and the debate that you might have had on other kinds of legislation, maybe the structure that Thomas is talking about might be a little excessive.
Well, that might be the case. I mean, if you actually go in and do this massive bill and look at some of these earmarks, you know, you can come across some that really kind of sound silly. You know, why does the Rock and Roll Museum need money? Why does the B.B. King Museum necessarily need money? You know, around our newsroom, we're not really encouraged to use the word pork because it has a negative connotation. But, you know, basically there's a sort of know-it-when-you-see-it test that I like to use. You know, for example, last year, a senator from Iowa got a $50 million grant to build an indoor rainforest at the crossroads of a couple of interstates in Coralville. I mean, that really struck some as excessive. And but there's tons of things in here which are perfectly reasonable sounding. And, you know, if you go to the Citizens Against Government Waste website or even try to read the bill yourself, you can look at yourself. You can probably even find what's going on in your community. Mm-hmm. You certainly could find out from your member of Congress.
Thomas, have a good time at the new museum when it opens.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Joining us now is Tom Schatz, president of Citizens Against Government Waste, the organization we mentioned a little bit earlier. His organization monitors pork barrel spending on Capitol Hill, and he's with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much.
You've said the 2005 omnibus spending bill confirms the appropriations process is broken. How come?
First of all, the project, or I should say the provision that has held up consideration of this bill was inserted without the knowledge of any of the members of the Appropriations Committee. It was done by staff. It was a provision that would have allowed members of the Appropriations Committee to have access to IRS facilities and, indeed, our individual tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
This was a poorly drafted provision, obviously. Nobody looked at it, and you trusted the IRS, so there you are. But that was embarrassing. The pork barrel projects were not embarrassing, so there's a vote this week to reconsider this omnibus spending bill, all $388 billion, but they're not removing a single pork barrel project. They're just taking out this IRS provision.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no shame when it comes to pork.
How much has the number of projects and the amount of money devoted to them gone up over, say, what, the past 10 years or so?
It's gone up substantially. We have that information on our website, cagw.org, and certainly most recent comparison where we compiled an entire year's list was 2004, which is the prior fiscal year, versus 2003. The number of projects went up by about 13%. The dollar amount, however, only went up about 1.5%. So it's increased every year over that period of time, the last 4 or 5 years, and it has increased under a supposedly fiscally conservative Republican-run Congress and White House.
Mm-hmm. But don't some of these projects help the communities? That, I mean, for example, that B.B. King Museum, we had the gentleman on who runs it earlier. He said this is going to be a vital project to, you know, give jobs and development in a poverty-stricken area of the country.
Well, there's lots of them like that. The problem with the way that a number of these projects get awarded is that there is no process to make the awards. It's simply the judgment of the member of Congress. Grants like that for museums, unless you're talking about the Smithsonian, are supposed to be competitively awarded. Our objection to many of these projects is that there is no competition. The Economic Development Initiative Program under the Department of Housing and Urban Development is supposed to be competitive, and Congress essentially hijacks that process and awards the grants to their own states and districts without any either peer review or consideration by the agency that it's set up to make those judgments. So it makes it very difficult to determine which ones truly are worthy, because you can defend any single one of them.
Let's talk now with Paul. Paul joins us from Story City, Iowa.
Yes, how are you?
I'm very well, Paul.
Yeah, we're the recipients of that big rainforest over near Cedar Rapids.
Really? You're going to have a rainforest in Cedar Rapids?
Right. I think right after that, the Corps of Engineers will dig the Amazon River right next to it.
But are they going to make sure it doesn't overflow? That's the big question.
Senator Grassley, I really respect. I voted for him, and he's very good at protecting whistleblowers, and I think he has a great congressional record. But like all people in Washington, he goes after the pork barrel, especially since we have no military bases or huge government contractors in Iowa. It's a way to get more federal money.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always entertaining to me to hear everybody, when they defend these pork barrel projects, to ultimately say it's for the children. The B.B. King Museum is for the children. Well, like most jazz artists, he came up through strip clubs and you know, I doubt if that's an instructive example to children.
And also the disreputable profession of being on the radio as a disc jockey, but go ahead.
That's right. I was on the radio as a disc jockey myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that at some point we have to wonder about the collective effect of this. The European community, you know, a euro dollar now is, what, $1.35?
Mm-hmm.
There are 500 million people. We're 280 million. How long will foreign banks begin, you know, keep buying American debt faced with our competitors? And you have to ask yourself, is the European community paying $2 billion a week for a war? No, they're not.
Okay,
and
cool.
Our economic position is looking very strained versus the world, and to do this kind of discretionary spending is literally stupid.
Paul, thanks very much. Tom Schatz, I suspect you agree with Tom.
I think the point, one of the points that he just made, and I had not heard the earlier conversation about the museum, but the point about the children, you know, give me a break. This is what we're handing to our children is a massive debt. And the moral issues were certainly prominent during the campaign and seemed to be the number one issue when people left the voting booth, but it means a lot of different things to different people. What it meant to Thomas Jefferson was that it was immoral to leave this kind of debt to our children and grandchildren. And I don't see that guilt or shame or any kind of conscience in Washington, D.C. right now. There's some effort being made. There's a few members of Congress. There certainly were a few more fiscal conservatives elected to the U.S. Senate, which may help pay or focus more attention on the deficit. Apparently, the head of the Office of Management and Budget at a retreat for Republicans over this past weekend did hear an earful about the deficit and what are we going to do about it. I don't know that this is the kind of legacy that the Republican Congress and the White House would want to leave for the next generation. You know, we all thought, certainly growing up as a baby boomer as I did, that our parents and, you know, ancestors were supposed to leave us with a better life
mm-hmm.
and a better economic situation.
Tom Schatz, I want to thank you. Thanks very much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Tom Schatz, president of Citizens Against Government Waste, joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another listener on the line. This is Bill. Bill's calling from Montgomery County in Maryland.
Yes, this is Bill. Just wanted to make a couple quick points. I used to work as a congressional staffer in public works transportation. And, you know, I find it really ironic. If you take a look at the past election, the blue map versus the red map, you know, in public works projects, you have donor states and then you have receiver states. And ironically, the donor states largely are the blue ones and the receiver states largely are the red ones. Red states are the very states that complain about against taxation and fees, the very things that make these public works projects possible. And I can tell you as a former congressional staffer that every staffer, regardless of how much a member may bemoan public works projects, every staffer is charged with trying to essentially bring home the bacon. And it's not necessarily bridges and roads. It's monies for universities, educational funds. It can be any number of things. It's not just, you know, steel and mortar. And what really frustrates me in all of this is that the states that are being taxed and are largely the donor states are the very ones that are in the blue map. And the states like Alabama and Mississippi and Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, they're the receiver states. And largely those folks oppose the taxation, the very taxation that funds the projects they benefit from. That's my comment.
Well, thanks for that remark, Bill. But and we appreciate the phone call. Andy Taylor, though, just a brief time available, but doesn't it sort of make sense that the majority of federal largesse should go to the poorer states or at least out of proportion with the per capita?
I suppose. I mean, but one of the things actually that is going on is that a lot of this stuff goes to states like Alaska or Hawaii, where there are very senior members of the Senate Appropriations Committee. And if you take a look at the earmarks that they get and divide by the number of people in that state, it gets to be quite dramatic when compared to, say, a state like New York, where there's a bigger population, but maybe a comparable number of these projects. Secondly, there's basically a formula that Democrats get a certain percentage of these things and mm-hmm. Republicans get a certain percentage. It's typically 60-40. Well, Democrats got more than 40% of the vote in the election, so they kind of argue it's unfair as well.
Andy Taylor, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it. Andy Taylor, a senior writer for Congressional Quarterly, was with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back, a member of the House Appropriations Committee will join us to continue this conversation. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about the power and the pitfalls of pork. Joining us now is Congressman Jose Serrano, a Democrat from New York, a member of the House Appropriations Committee, who's been extremely successful this year in securing money for his district. He joins us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. It's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
You got $17.9 million in federal funding for nearly 50 projects in your district in the Bronx this year. How were you able to do it?
Well, I think that we were able to continue to prove to the committee that one of the poorest districts in the area, if not the poorest district, had certain needs, that some of these programs were ongoing issues that we have been dealing with. They speak to everything from economic development to the very serious pollution issue. And remembering that it is our belief, it has always been my belief, that one of the reasons for the so-called earmarks, or pork barrel, if you will, mm-hmm. is the fact that traditionally federal agencies do not pay attention to certain communities throughout this country. And so it becomes the role of the legislator to do that. As the ranking member on that subcommittee, meaning the top Democrat, I can tell you that I get over hundreds of requests from Democrats, as well the chairman of the committee gets requests from Republicans, and they address needs in their communities. And that is the big difference. Do you wait for the agency to agree with the local legislator and the community that there might be a need that needs to be addressed, or do you go ahead and use your ability to get those dollars sent to your district? And lastly, always keep in mind that the grants given out by the agencies are in the millions of dollars, whereas in most cases, the earmarks gotten by members of Congress are in the low thousands of dollars.
Hundreds of thousands.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Could you take a call with us?
Absolutely.
Let's talk with Barbara. Barbara's calling from Lawrenceville, New Jersey.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm calling specifically about the fact that, Congress was embarrassed because no one had read, or very few had read, the IRS provision that was tucked into the bill. And I think that a solution to that might be that when each bill is written, it should be typed into an indexing program and automatically put under certain headings, like education, taxes, and one heading could be earmarked spending. And I think that each congressman should be required to visit the site and review it and sign off on it. And he could go down the list very quickly and see the items that are of interest to his state. And I think this concept probably needs some refining, but I think it's a start at keeping the congressman better informed.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that many of these bills are hundreds of pages long, and it's impossible for them to read everyone, and I think that this would be a more efficient way of handling it.
Well, Congressman, do you read the earmarks of every other member of Congress?
I read the earmarks that come through my committee. In fact, I play a major role in approving those earmarks, and yes, I'm aware of that, and I'm aware of their petition. There's a process by which they ask for it. They explain what it is. As far as what was the caller speaking about, some of the items that appeared in the bill, that's an unfortunate tradition in our government, that a lot of things appear in bills at the last moment. They've been grappling with this since the beginning of the Republic, and we will continue to deal with it. What I think has happened with this IRS issue is that I call so much attention to it that I really think you're going to see a change. You're going to see a desire on the part of both parties, members in both parties, to say, okay, you know, we expect some things to show up at the last moment, but you certainly can't have anything of this magnitude show up and not have people be aware that it exists inside the bill.
But doesn't the problem get worse when you go from 3,000 earmarks 10 years ago to 11,000 now?
Well, but what we were talking about was not an earmark.
No, I understand
the
that.
IRS thing.
Yeah, yes.
You know, but no, it doesn't, because, you see, I also take another view to this, and that is that I will not, and I say this most politely, I will not feel ashamed of the fact that members of Congress bring dollars earmarked home, when, in my opinion, we are now earmarking over $200 billion in a war we should have never been involved in. Now, I know that's a discussion for another day, but what's the difference between government waving the flag and spending a couple of $100 billion on a misguided war and Congressman X bringing $50,000 or $100,000 home to a program that he knows will serve his community?
One difference might be that Congress debates all those spending bills for the Defense Department, and we just had an election where the war in Iraq was the major issue, and whether you like it or not, the president and his party won.
I understand your viewpoint on that, but the fact of that, you know, we're not discussing the war now, and I brought it up, but, you know, we could always argue about how much permission he got to go this far. Nevertheless, the same bill that pays for the war also pays for other items, and to suggest, I'm not suggesting you're saying that, but to suggest that people don't read their earmarks, believe me, every member knows what earmarks go to his state, and a lot of members look around to see what similar earmarks go to other states. So that process, I would say, in many ways is more open than some of the other things that are approved in the budget.
Barbara, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate
You're welcome.
It. And Congressman Serrano, we appreciate your taking the time to speak with us
Thank
today.
Thank you so much.
Jose Serrano, a Democrat from New York, he joined us by phone from his office in New York City.